This is John Fisher for the Ultimate Practice Builder for New York Injury Lawyers. Today, we're very lucky to have Mike Swanson, an owner and chief executive officer of Advocate Capital based in Nashville, Tennessee. Mike is not only the chief executive officer of Advocate Capital, but he's written a tremendous book called How David Beats Goliath, Access to Capital for Contingent Fee Law Firms, which is a tremendous primer on the use of case expense funding with a third party, such as Advocate Capital. So, Mike, first of all, thank you very much for being on the call.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's an honor to spend time with you, John.
Absolutely. So, first of all, what I'd like to delve into, Mike, is exactly what your company does, Advocate Capital, and what type of value you can provide to a law practice that needs to meet cash flow demands.
Well, sure, John. Thank you for asking. Well, our mission here at Advocate Capital is to help trial lawyers get even better results for their clients. That's our overall mission. We do that primarily through our case expense funding product, but we do a few other things too. With regard to the case expense funding product, well, John, you know firsthand how difficult the contingent fee business model is, right?
Yes.
Very, very, very challenging. I'm a business person. I'm not a lawyer. I can't imagine having to run my business on a contingent basis. It's just incredibly challenging from a cash flow standpoint. However, the contingent fee model or system, if you will, is virtually the keys to the courtroom for the citizens in this country. Thanks to the Seventh Amendment, we all have access to the courtroom if need be, if there's a dispute. But without the contingent fee contract, where would we be? Most people cannot afford to hire an hourly lawyer for 2 years to prosecute their case. So that, you know, being a part of that system of justice, it really gives us a charge here. So our case expense funding product is aimed at solving that challenge that every contingent fee law firm has, which is the cash flow challenge. And we do that very simply. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
Well, the solution is pretty simple, really. We set up a line of credit just like a bank would do. We don't evaluate cases. We're not lawyers. We're not smart enough to know a good case. We set up a line of credit for the law firm to use for their case expenses. But what's really special about Advocate Capital is a technology that we have built. In fact, sometimes I tell people we're almost more of a technology company than a lender, because it's that technology, and it's called AdvoTrack. It's a proprietary platform that we have here in Nashville. We use that software to track our law firm clients' lines of credit case by case. So although we have hundreds of clients throughout the country, we're actually tracking right now over 33,000 cases for those clients 24/7, and it's almost as if they have an individual miniature loan for each case. Now, the reason that's important is that consistently across the country, the Supreme Courts and the ethics panels have said that if a contingent fee law firm borrows from a third party for their case expenses, and if they're able to document exactly what they borrowed, exactly what their borrowing costs were on a case-specific basis, that has the effect of turning the borrowing cost into another case expense. So our clients enjoy a zero-cost loan, essentially, for every case that they win or get their expenses back on, because at the end of the case, they're able to show their clients, here's what I borrowed for your case expenses, here's what I paid Advocate Capital in terms of borrowing costs, and they then get reimbursed from the case for that, just as if it was an expert witness fee or a depo fee or what have you. So access to capital at that kind of dramatically reduced net pricing is unheard of. There's no other business that can access capital that cheaply. We know that about 95 to 97% of the time, a contingent fee lawyer is getting his or her expenses back. So the net effect for our clients across all cases is a borrowing cost of well under 1%, which, again, that beats a bank line of credit.
Well, absolutely. Mike, let's take this back, because a lot of lawyers traditionally have always done it the same way, which is they've operated on their retained profits, the money that they have in the bank, or their personal savings. They use that money to fund their cases. In some firms, those case expenses can be $1 million, $2 million, really substantial expenses. And the downside for the attorneys who do that is you're making an interest-free loan on each case to your client. You're not actually seeing any return at all. In fact, you're losing money because with inflation, the value of that money is going down. But you gave a great example in your book, How David Beats Goliath, about having about $1 million stashed in a suitcase under a bed. Can you explain that?
Sure, right. And you're absolutely right. The most common form of funding case expenses is what we call self-funding, where the law firm says, well, I guess I'm going to have to do this myself, and they just do it that way, not because it's legally or ethically required. It's just kind of the path of least resistance, so they do it themselves. Right, so in my book I gave an example of that suitcase. We try to help a law firm's first think about, look, it's not so much that you're needy of money or that you're in trouble, but you have loaned your after-tax cash to your business indefinitely, interest-free, without a note, without a security interest. It's as if you took that $1 million of after-tax cash and just put it in a suitcase and stuck it under your bed, and you're not allowed to touch it for 4 years. So we can all agree that that would not be the most prudent use of cash, just to, you know, lock it up for 40 years and do nothing with it. So it's not so much that they need the money, but if they can get that money out of their practice, could they do something positive with it, right? Take more cases, help more people, do an even better job. And that's one of the things that most people don't realize before they become a client of Advocate Capital, is that our product helps them do an even better job on their existing cases. Now, we know this because we have studied it for so long, and we've been getting anecdotal stories from our clients on a regular basis. Hey, I was able to hire all five witnesses expert witnesses I needed for this case. I was able to hire the best ones, not just the ones that would work on a contingent basis themselves. And here's how much better result I got because of it. And in fact, the first chapter of my book is called Meet Wendy. It's a real-life story about one of our clients who had a case out in San Francisco, and it shows the impact of having the right capital available on the client. It's better off for the client.
And Mike, you bring up a great example, which is if you take that $1 million that's in a suitcase under your bed, and instead of just leaving it there, take it out and start using that money to market and grow a law practice, you're going to have even more cases and better cases because you're using the capital instead of locking it away in the case expenses for your different clients. But let's go through a little bit about the different sources that we discovered. Most lawyers traditionally will use their personal savings. Some of them will use banks or credit cards. What are the downsides of using a bank or credit cards to fund a law practice?
Well, it's amazing, John. You're right. We see potential clients coming to us and saying, hey, we'd like to sign up. And when we look at their personal financial statement, they might have 10 or 12 credit cards and, well over $100,000 in credit card debt, and that's just what they've done to fund their business, which is, you know, sounds crazy, but it's being done out there. One of the problems with credit cards, of course, is that it's kind of a slippery slope, or can be, in a couple of different ways. First, in terms of cost, you know, the banks now have written these mandatory arbitration clauses and all kinds of other bells and whistles into their documents, so that for the most part, banks who give you a credit card, if you're late on one payment by 30 days, read your fine print, because they can take your rate up to 29.99%. And they can single-handedly, without telling you, reduce your credit limit. So you may have a $10,000 limit on a $20,000 card. They could drop your limit to $10,000, and now not only are you paying almost 30% interest on that, your credit score goes down, because now you're using more of your quote-unquote available limit. The other credit card companies see that your score goes down, they lower your limit, and it kind of spirals and can really spiral out of control. So it's a very dangerous way to fund your practice. With regard to banks, I'm glad you asked about banks. Banks are a commodity, and banks all have the same products across the whole country. They're highly regulated by the government, and so they really don't have a diversity of products. They can't diversify very much. They all have the same products and essentially the same pricing. And what they're not good at is understanding nuance or business models that are out of the ordinary, and that's what a contingent fee practice is. It's not an ordinary business model. And oftentimes, for example, they'll want to have this 30-day clean-out clause, in a line of credit for a contingent fee law firm so that the law firm has to pay that line down to zero for 30 days once a year. Now, that's crazy. A contingent fee practice is not a seasonal business. They don't have a slow season and a busy season like a retailer would. But that's just how banks think. They try to apply the same exact model, if you will, to every business in their portfolio. And oftentimes, it just doesn't work well for a contingent fee law firm.
Right, and exactly. And the banks, I find also, they're looking for hard, tangible assets for secured loans, for example, machines, materials, equipment. And for lawyers running a personal injury practice, that doesn't exist. The assets of the law firm might be a couple of laptops, a couple of computers, and a little bit of office furniture, and that's it. And the banks look at that and say, well, you know, we're looking for something more substantial than that. So,
Yeah, collateral is a big deal with banks and with a lot of lenders, actually. And one of the things that I do as an intermediary between trial lawyers and the banking system, I actually am facing the other direction very often, educating bankers why this is a receivable, right? They look at a contingent fee contract and they kind of shrug their shoulders in terms of being able to evaluate that as collateral. The most powerful person in any bank is the chief credit officer because he or she can say no. So the banker brings a potential client to the credit team and they have to explain, what do we do if things go badly? What do we have to deal with in terms of collateral? Hey, they know how to foreclose on a house and sell it or an automobile or some other hard asset. But when the credit team at a bank really starts to think about what will I have if this loan defaults, they're going to have a file drawer full of contingent fee contracts. They have no idea what to do with that. And they start thinking through, boy, I'm going to have to try to liquidate that. They have no idea. So collateral is another really big problem when dealing with a bank.
Exactly, and the banks don't see the value in these substantial contingent fee cases that a company like Advocate Capital does. But let's talk a little bit about the borrowing costs. So let's say that an attorney wants to use Advocate Capital for the funding of case expenses and is going to turn over the borrowing costs to the client. How would you recommend, and what are the benefits to the client of that situation? Because clearly there's benefits in terms of cash flow for the lawyer and their practice, but what is the benefit to the client?
Right. That's the most important question, and in fact, if any listeners want to visit Advocate Capital, you'll see their advocatecapital.com or our YouTube channel. One of the videos we've created is called The Most Important Question. And the most important question any potential client of ours can ask is, how will this impact my client? Because that's why you do what you do. You do it to help people. And the reality is that in every contingent fee law firm across the country, there is a competition amongst the cases at that law firm. Every case is in competition with the other cases for limited resources, both time and finances. There's not an unlimited amount of money in any contingent fee law firm, and so the reality is there has to be compromises made, delays made in funding this or that case. It shouldn't happen, but it does. So I can tell you, if I was going to hire a contingent fee law firm, and hopefully I never will have to, but if I did, I would want to see their finances, and I want to know how are they going to pursue my case as aggressively as it needs to be pursued from a financial standpoint, not just, we'll wing it and self-fund it.
And one thing, Mike, I can tell you is handling a catastrophic medical malpractice law firm, this is an issue that constantly comes up, which is you're headed towards trial. You've got maybe 3 to 5 different highly paid experts who are billing $500 to $1,000 an hour round the clock, and you've got enormous expenses. And one of the worst things I can tell you that I've seen that lawyers do is they start to skimp and they say, well, let's say we don't need this expert. We don't need a life care plan. We can avoid the economist. But what you're really doing is the case is not being worked up the way that it should be because you're concerned about spending too much money. What if you lose the case? But with Advocate Capital, that you've got the funding that you need to hire the best experts, there's less concern. And what I tell clients is this is a way of making Advocate Capital part of your team so there will be no worry that you're going to be outspent by these big businesses and insurance and hospitals and doctors, that type of thing. Let me talk to you a little bit about the book. You make a very excellent point about the difference between net worth and income. And I really like that point in your book because a lot of attorneys have high incomes and they think, well, I've made it because I've got a big fancy car, I've got a huge income, and my life is good. But what you emphasize in your book is focusing and monitoring your net worth. Can you comment on that?
Well, sure. John, one of the things that we do, and you know, by the way, I want to point out that you're also an author of an excellent book, The Power of a System. And one of the points that I like that you make in your book is that you're not afraid to share the mistakes you've made in your practice over the years, so that other people can learn from them. And I think learning from mistakes from other people's mistakes is the smartest way to learn. I try to tell my kids that too. Learn from my mistakes, don't make your own. But one of the things that we learn from as a commercial lender is from the people who have made mistakes. We're very selective. We only fund one out of every four applications that we get. And one of the most common reasons we don't move forward with a law firm is a lack of net worth. There's a shocking number of talented, dedicated, caring, hardworking trial lawyers in this country who are broke. It's very sad, and the insurance companies love it because they know they can string cases out and it will hurt. Sometimes our clients will ask me, Mike, how do I retire from this business? Or they'll say, my business is worth $3 million. Well, the market value of something is what a willing buyer would pay a willing seller, and a contingent fee law practice from a stock value is frankly not very marketable or very valuable. So the smartest thing you can do as a contingent fee lawyer is use your business to help people, but secondly, you need to pay yourself. You need to start building net worth outside of your law firm so that you'll be in a position to serve your clients the way they need it and to take care of your family and to be planning for the future. Far too many trial lawyers, because they're so passionate about helping people, they just leave everything in their practice. They live, believe it or not, they live paycheck to paycheck, and they justify that because, well, I'm helping people and I don't want to think about the money too much. But it's important for you, your family, and your clients to build net worth outside of your law firm.
Right, and that's a critical point because I think that way too many lawyers and other professionals get focused on the amount of income they have as opposed to their net worth, and that's very important. One other great point you make in your book is about how lawyers focus on the technical aspects of doing great trial work and great depositions, but they don't pay any attention to law firm financing, the profit and loss statements, or income statements. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, well, John, I think you're probably aware that the majority of contingent fee lawyers have an undergrad degree in, you know, political science or history or economics or something like this. So they're not getting any business training in school. And in fact, some of them choose a non-business degree because they don't like business. Then they go to law school, there's no business training there. Then they get out into the real world, and if they go on their own, suddenly they're a business owner and they're thrust into that. Most of them don't like that aspect of it. They just want to be a lawyer. I just talked to a new customer of ours yesterday. He says, I don't like to think about the business stuff. I know I should. I just want to be a lawyer. So there's this huge lack of training, first of all, and also a lack of, I think, propensity to do business things. But look, it's so important for trial lawyers to discipline themselves, to spend time on that. And as you mentioned in your book, you need to not just work in your practice, you need to work on your practice. And if you own a contingent fee law firm, you are a CEO of a business. And it's important, again, for the sake of your clients, that you spend time not just learning how to be the best courtroom lawyer, but how to be an effective CEO.
And you make a great point that you need to start thinking as a business person that your law practice is not a law practice per se, but a business, and have sort of a mindset shift like that. Now, Mike, if the attorneys listening to this call would like to speak with you or someone at Advocate Capital, and I can share in the interest of self-disclosure that I work with Advocate Capital, and I've been very pleased how it's freed up cash flow and helped my business, because my business, just like a lot of other injury law firms, there are huge gaps in terms of income. There could be 6 months, 9 months, or even a year where there's no legal fees coming in. And this Advocate Capital has definitely helped free cash flow, and it's advanced the case. So when those big cases do come in, there's no concerns about having payroll met and paying the rent and things like that. But if a lawyer on this call would like to contact you or Advocate Capital, what would they do?
Well, John, certainly they could reach me through you if they're on this podcast. I'm not sure exactly how that works. But the best way to reach us really is at our website, which is advocatecapital.com, A-D-V-O-C-A-T-E, capital.com. And there are links there. You can, if you click on the About tab, you can contact me there. I'm listed. Just call our 800 number. We'd be happy to speak with you. And any of my staff can set up a conference call with me if they'd like to speak to me.
That'd be fantastic. And what is the best way for our listeners? I think a great primer on case expense funding is your book, How David Beats Goliath. How can our listeners go about buying that book?
Another great website, it's howdavidbeatsgoliath.com, howdavidbeatsgoliath.com. And on my website for the book, you can click through to iTunes, Amazon, and other retailers that are selling my book. I want to mention that I'm donating 100% of the profits from the book to the American Association for Justice Seventh Amendment Fund. So I'm not doing it to make money. I'm doing it to help trial lawyers because I believe in what trial lawyers do. John, when I bought Advocate Capital, my business partner, I bought Advocate Capital in 2000, I didn't even know what trial lawyers did. And we learned really quickly that the whole fallacy of Nationwide being on your side and being in good hands with Allstate and this kind of thing is all just public relations. And so I'm excited to tell you that I'm a business person who believes in what trial lawyers do, and the book is part of that. Certainly, it's good for business, but I'm not doing it to make money. And if anybody has questions, I'm happy to speak with them. You can contact me through that website as well.
And Mike, thank you for all the service you provide, because I know that attorneys out there who are looking to start their own practice are like, okay, what am I going to do? Liquidate my retirement account? How am I going to get funding to do this? And you provide an invaluable service, because when that bank maybe is saying no or doesn't give the line of credit that the attorney needs, you're there to sort of help ease the cash flow concerns and help people launch a business that otherwise might not exist. So thank you for the service you provide, and thank you for making time for this call.
Well, John, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you. You're a valued customer, but also a friend, and you do important work in your community. You know, medical malpractice is a tough place to be right now in most states, but it's vitally important work that needs to be done. And so thank you for giving the citizens of upstate New York access to the courtroom, which they desperately need.